This podcast is being recorded on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders past, present and emerging, and acknowledge their connection ongoing to cultures, water and land. We'd like to also acknowledge that colonisation and genocide are ongoing processes that continue to this day, that sovereignty was never ceded, and this always was and always will be Aboriginal land.
Hey, welcome to Auspol Snack Pod, the podcast where we serve you up bite-sized chunks of Australian news and politics with a side of crispy memes. We are also the official podcast of the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, so if you hear us talking about memes or any other stupid shit, and you're like, hey, I want to see these memes and that stupid shit, well, you should come and join the group and hang out. It'll be a nice time. I'm Zach Lesnack. I'm a mod on the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group, and with me is my good buddy, close friend and confidant, member of my inner circle.
Hi, I'm Noon. I am all of those things. I'm also the creator and admin of Auspol Shitposting, and I'm excited to be back.
Yeah, it's always a good time. Thank you, Noon, for joining me again. It has been a big week in Australian politics.
Yeah.
If you're talking about, like, just the day-to-day machinery of the parliament on the one hand, but also a whole bunch of other stuff as well.
Yeah.
So
this has been the last sitting week of this term of parliament, or the session of parliament, and the last couple of weeks when all the drama normally happens. And maybe, unfortunately, we haven't had any leadership spills in this, the so-called killing season. But we have had a lot of silly bullshit, so...
Yeah, well, it's the last sitting week, so obviously the political parties have to score as many points against each other as possible without getting anything done to actually better the lives of the people in this so-called nation.
That is the essential thing, yeah.
Yeah, that's what politics is all about. It was also a big week for memes, Australian political memes. We had the Barclay McGain saga,
yeah.
A member of the... Or the leader, I think, of the young... LNP, Liberal National Party in Queensland, hitting the streets and schoolies week, making a video of himself interviewing people, asking them whether or not they love our Prime Minister and our national anthem and our flag, which is,
and
frankly, riveting content.
Hate Aboriginal people? Answer was yes.
Well, yeah, he interviewed someone who claimed to be, quote, bit of a lefty himself, and then went on to say that we need to stop celebrating Indigenous culture because they couldn't invent the wheel, which, by the way, white people didn't invent the wheel either, you fucking genius.
A lot of people think that guy, the I'm a bit of a lefty guy, was bullshitting because there are photos of him with Malcolm Turnbull.
Oh,
but
yeah.
I think he legitimately thinks of himself as a bit of a lefty in the LNP.
Oh, for sure. He said, it's like, oh, yeah, I'm like economically left.
Yeah, I don't think he knows what that means, but...
Economically, I'm an idiot, but socially, I'm a fuckwit.
I hate people.
he was also a member of the LNP, so not exactly a plant, but anyway, Barclay McGain, the leader of the young LNP, was seen laughing at this guy, being a huge racist. Now he's, like, deleted all his social media accounts.
Yeah.
A video also came out of his little brother purportedly egging him, which some people have said... lol, fake. But I choose to believe that it's true because it's funny.
It's better to believe that that happened.
Absolutely. Definitely one of the more deserving recipients of an egg to the forehead of the week.
Yeah.
Maybe that can be a new segment for another time.
I feel like, unlike Fraser Anning, it was also proportional. You know, like Fraser Anning was like a full-on white supremacist doing like literal Nazi organizing. This guy was a shithead and he got egged. I feel like, you know,
like a shithead with a position of power, though. To be fair, his parents obviously guaranteed ahead of time that he would be both a stuck-up racist and a member of the LNP by naming him Barclay McGain.
Yeah.
So you can't put all of that on him.
It's true.
But yeah, we've got a lot to get through this week. It might be a long episode, and we've already wasted quite a few minutes.
Yeah.
So let's get into it, Noon.
Cool.
What have you brought for us to entree on?
Yeah. So this is the CPRS, the Carbon Pollution Reduction Scheme, which has sort of been the impetus for a large number of the memes on the Auspol Shitposting Facebook group this week and elsewhere as well. It's been a big week for left renewal, and all of the various like Labour hack meme pages.
We all love talking about policy that didn't happen from 10 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. It turns out that everyone really does actually enjoy talking about that. I know you were joking, but no, everyone fucking loves it.
Including the, you know, people who are supposed to represent us.
Yeah, and be doing things now, not 10 years ago. But anyway, so yeah, look, I'll give a quick rundown of the CPRS for people who maybe didn't know what was happening
catch
this week.
It at the time, yeah. Or like, or me when I was in year 12 in 2009 was not paying attention to Parliament.
No, that's right, yeah. So this was a emission trading scheme that Kevin Rudd brought in, and it was, yeah, brought in, developed over a few years from 2007 to 2010, and then it was brought into Parliament, and the Parliament voted it down twice, which would have been a potential trigger for Kevin Rudd to call a double dissolution election, but he decided not to do that and instead to basically, like, not push ahead with the CPRS. And famously, the Greens voted against the bill, and so it was...
The Greens, but they hate emissions.
Yeah, well, that's right. Or do they? And that's really what the like quality of debate has been around this week, which was the 10-year anniversary of the CPRS being voted down. The Labour Party just spent like a full solid like 4 or 5 days complaining about how the Greens are Liberal Party members and also love how the climate is changing and don't care about the environment and don't want to do anything, which is just like blatantly silly. But
I mean, fair coming from Labour, who have an amazing track record of extremely good climate action, right?
Yeah, including the CPRS, which have made very, very little difference to Australia's carbon emission reduction. That is a bit sort of contentious. The Labour hacks will tell you that it would have made a huge difference, and literally everyone else will tell you that it wouldn't. So I'll leave it up to the listener to decide who to believe.
Who knows?
One of the things that was bad about it was that the Labour Party put a lot of effort into negotiating with Ian Macfarlane and other Liberal Party members to basically include a lot of payouts for coal mines and coal-fired power stations and all of this other stuff. And they also implemented sort of like guarantees that would prevent it from reducing emissions by too much. And
Well, yeah, I mean, all things in moderation, including saving the fucking planet.
Yeah, and this is something that, again, is debated by Labour hacks and Green hacks. The Green hacks say that the Labour Party very carefully designed it to not be improvable so that the Liberals would vote for it, and the Labour Party are basically like, nah. it's been a complete shit show, and this week, on the 2nd of December, which is the 10-year anniversary, in the Senate, Penny Wong put forward a motion that was basically like, it's the Greens' fault, and maybe also the Liberals, that climate change. And the Greens voted against it, and the Labour Party just like went fucking buck wild with these photos of Parliament. Albo put up a post, his social media team put up a post on Facebook of the Senate divided, voting no to the CPRS 10 years ago, and then the Senate voting no to this dumb fucking bill that Penny Wong put up this week.
And I'd just like to point out, he like really missed a golden opportunity to turn that into an actual meme, which would have gotten him way more likes,
because
everybody,
all
these celebrities on Twitter and everybody in general is doing, this is what it looked like in 2009.
Yeah.
And this is what it looked like in 2019.
Yeah, true. 10-year challenge. Yeah, that's a good point. Or even like a galaxy brain thing. Or like a, you know, Drake pointing meme of like, voting for the CPRS 10 years ago, no thanks. Climate action now, still no thanks. Would have been funny.
I mean, but that Albo does sound like something that Left Renewal would do. Maybe they have.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
But, so this actually leads on nicely to our shitpost of the week. To our
shitpost of the week.
Yeah, which is a galaxy brain meme. It's original content from Michael Stanley on the Ozpol shitposting Facebook group. Thank you, Michael. It's Michael Yelnats.
Yes. It's a big one, too. It's got 6 stages of galaxy brain.
Yeah.
Which is quite a few. So you want to take us through it, Noon?
Maybe we can alternate reading levels.
All right, okay.
So the smallest brain level says, by siding with the Liberals to vote down the CPRS, the Greens ensured a toxic culture war around climate action and higher emissions in its absence.
Brain level 2. The CPRS was worse than nothing, a novel plan built to appease the carbon lobby in the Liberal Party, and the Greens were right to reject it.
Level 3. With perfect hindsight of how badly Labour would fuck it up subsequently, the Greens should have voted for the CPRS.
Level 4, and this is starting to get like chest and heart brain takes as well. Market-based solutions are only a marginal and unnecessary part of the array of solutions needed to confront the climate crisis, and only enjoy the support of parts of the political class because they represent a new opportunity for financialization.
I like that take.
That's a take.
Yeah. The second last galaxy brain level is, the scale of the climate crisis is even more alarming than we realized in 2009, and whatever gains the CPRS would have delivered would be irrelevant to the changes we need to implement now.
That's kind of what we were saying before.
Yeah.
And the final level, this is like a galaxy brain dude in lotus position communing with the whole of the universe. Australia is on track to meet its Paris targets while ensuring people in the third world can be freed from energy poverty.
Yeah.
That's some woke shit. That's very Craig Emerson from last week, basically talking about how wanting to stop the extraction of fossil fuels is racist.
Against India because they have electricity.
Why do you not want India to modernize, Noon? Why do you hate them so much?
Yep. That's my main motivation in everything I do, is preventing the modernization of India.
Yeah. So, the energy poverty thing is a hilarious take, but also, the government being like, yeah, we're on track to meet our Paris targets, which they're only doing basically via an accounting loophole.
Yep.
Because they have hangover credits from the Kyoto targets.
And the international community has kind of been like, hey, that's kind of dodgy. Could you not? And the Australian government has been like, yes, yes, we will continue to do that, certainly.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. You know, world leaders, even though our emissions are going up and have been every year for the last, half a decade.
Nearly done with the CPRS. It was a dumb shit show. But as the Galaxy Brain meme mentioned, the Labour Party and the Greens collaborated to bring in the so-called carbon tax under Julia Gillard, a year later. So maybe it would have been fine. Maybe the CPRS was, in fact, replaced with better policy.
And then what happened to that policy?
I think the Greens ruined it, if I remember correctly. I'm not 100% sure about that.
And what about for people who don't
already know what's happening so that my joke will make sense? Yeah, Tony Abbott got rid of it when he was in power.
Wow. The party who was actually, in power. Wow, wild.
It's the Greens' fault.
Oh, yes. Sorry. It's the Greens' fault.
Speaking of things being the Greens' fault,
we have a potluck. We love potlucks.
We do. It's really nice.
This one is from an anonymous listener.
Potluck, where you bring the snacks.
Oh my God. The left is not eating itself. The left is dealing with systemic issues like sexism, racism, classism, ableism, and it's trying to undo an unjust society. So there are going to be people with learnt behaviours, with privileges, people who don't recognise their privilege, all that kind of bullshit. And the left are actually trying to deal with those people, as opposed to the right, where it's celebrated, essentially. So no, the left aren't eating themselves. We're actually pointing out systemic issues. It's fine.
Yeah, I like that. It's a good take.
Yeah, I think we've talked about it a little bit on the podcast before that, and it's been noted, but that basically the right is kind of really good at recruiting new people because they just say, yeah, sure, come however you are, whatever your prejudices are, we'll accept you with open arms. But leftist spaces or good leftist spaces need to actually put in a whole bunch of effort to be safe and accessible for people, because that is what we're all about. And that's really hard work. And sure, it's can be difficult, I suppose, to where do you draw the line between allowing people room to grow and change? But that's a decision that we can kind of make communally and make our way through. And it's probably not helpful to be you shouldn't ever criticize anybody.
Yeah.
Because, that as our anonymous listener points out, that's not the left eating itself. That's the left, actually trying to build something.
And, I think the left probably does eat itself a little bit. I definitely know I find it weird in communist spaces how people will get super sectarian about shit from 1916 and think that that is an important, relevant detail of organizing in the 21st century. But yeah, I think a lot of
that's
the
kind of a different thing to what a listener was getting at, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that a lot of the time when people are saying the left is eating itself, what they mean is don't hold me accountable for my words and actions.
Which, bad take. Thank you, listener. If you have something that you want to say and hear it on the podcast, please send us a minute or less of audio of yourself talking about something, or audio.
It could be music.
Music.
It could be
we've
you doing
a little
before. Character skit. If you want to be Tony Abbott for 1 minute or something like that, you know?
Yeah, if you've got a good Tony impression, send it in. You can email us at ozpolsnackpod@gmail.com. And if we like it, we'll play it on the show.
Yeah.
And have a chat about it.
All right, Zach, should we move on to our next stories?
Yeah, so now we're going to just cover off quickly a few developments in First Nations stories this week. Just going to do like a quick roundup. So one of the major things that's been happening is Andrew Bolt has basically declared culture war on Bruce Pascoe, the author of Dark Emu, which is a book basically detailing the fact that Indigenous society was far more like agriculturally and technologically advanced than colonists gave them credit for. And Andrew Bolt is basically being like, hey, this all sounds like bullshit to me, because if this was true, I would feel bad. And I don't want to feel bad.
Therefore,
and
that's basically, it must be not true.
Yeah, that's basically his position on everything. I mean, he's got a history, like a long history of extreme racism, including the denying the existence of the Stolen Generation and this kind of thing. So
Wasn't he convicted for something over that, or like charged? I'm not 100%
sure.
He's
definitely a convicted racist. I can't remember what the incident was. Yeah, but look, basically, he's a piece of shit. This attack is completely, like, disingenuous. Most of the stuff that he's disputing is, like, extremely granular facts and easily refuted by the original sources, which Bruce Pascoe meticulously quotes in his book.
Just to be clear about when you say, like, granular details, that's stuff like Bruce Pascoe said that there were wells that were, like, 20 feet deep, and Andrew Bolt, based on a website from some dickhead far-right people who also don't know what they're talking about, has been like, no, it was a maximum of 16 feet.
And that's and also like not that. True. Like
right, his, right. Not his... only is his claim false, it's also pointless.
Yeah, like, if it was true, it wouldn't make a difference, but it's also not true. This is all thoroughly detailed in a long piece by Rick Morton, writing for the Saturday paper, who basically...
Really good article, yeah.
Yeah, he went and did a whole bunch of research, checking up on all the original sources that Bruce Pascoe quotes in Dark Emu, and was like, yep, every single thing that he said checks out. He also said on Twitter that over the course of his correspondence with Andrew Bolt, Rick Morton asked him several times, three times actually, whether or not he had read Dark Emu, and Andrew Bolt refused to directly answer the question. He hasn't even read the fucking book, you guys.
Yeah.
So it's really hard not to be reminded of that quote from Toni Morrison. And she says that the purpose of racism is distraction. Basically, Andrew Bolt can... completely misinformed, can take a massive shit in the middle of the discourse, and then everybody else has to spend days and days and days cleaning up his mess. And meanwhile, we're not actually talking about the real issues.
Yep.
So we just wanted to quickly cover it off because I think it's important to acknowledge that the most read columnist in the country is A, an idiot, B, a liar, and C, a fucking huge racist.
Yep.
But also, I don't think that this story, like, needs much more investigation
than that. Totally. Yeah, maybe just go read Dark Emu instead of listening to the bullshit surrounding it. If there's one, like, takeaway lesson here, it's that it's a very well-researched book that has a lot of evidence supporting it, and...
And it's just, like, an amazing read as well. If you haven't read it, pick it up. So a couple of other things I wanted to mention in First Nations news. There's been a development with the Djaparong Embassy. So this is happening in near a town called Ararat, which is to the west of Melbourne, where the state government is trying to duplicate a highway. And as part of that highway duplication, a bunch of trees that are sacred to the local Indigenous people were slated for destruction. The latest development is that the federal court has upheld an appeal by... the Djaparong people appealing against a decision by the Minister for the Environment, Susan Lee, who basically approved the duplication and said that it was cool for some trees to be destroyed. They appealed it. It was upheld. So this is a good legal win for the Djaparong Embassy. The fight continues. They'll probably be back in court over this. The government is not going to just let this go. But this is good that, you know, this is the result of like months getting up to years of continued activism on this particular site. So all power to the Djaparong people who have been fighting against this, you know, congrats on this latest win. And we'll keep you updated on the story as it continues, because this is going to be an extremely protracted legal fight, which is probably going to, continue long into the future. But that's a little bit of good news, which is cool. And now for
some much less good news.
Much less good news. So the government has defunded the National Family Violence Prevention and Legal Services Forum, which is basically the peak body for Indigenous women who experience family violence. So they have an annual budget of just under $250,000, which obviously in government terms is fucking chump change.
Yep.
But yeah, they've been defunded. Their funding is not going to be renewed past the middle of next year, which is, you know, tragic, awful, obviously a part of a broader pattern of the government undermining public services in general, but specifically denying Indigenous people representation.
And domestic violence issues as well. Like, yep. I mean, yeah, there's no angle on this that is a responsible decision.
It's really bad. And I just wanted to read out this quote from Labor's Shadow Minister for Indigenous Affairs, Linda Burney. She said, "When you look at the shocking statistics relating to Aboriginal women and family violence, 34 times more likely to be hospitalized, 10 times more likely to be murdered from violent assault, it beggars belief that this would happen." So it's not just that, you know, it's important to have robust bodies representing victims of family violence, but specifically for Indigenous women, it's really important. And so for the government to do this is just horrible.
Yeah.
It's really bad. That about wraps it up for First Nations news. The only other thing I wanted to mention was Arnhem Land artist Baker Boy has dropped a new track this week. It's called Metagin. I wanted to play a clip from it on the show, but I also don't want to infringe copyright and get the show deleted.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to recommend that you go and check it out. It's got a fantastic music video shot in the National Gallery, Victoria. And it's just an absolute fucking banger of a track. The production is kind of on like, I mean, it's got all the classic like didgeridoo sounds, but it's also got this fat Missy Elliott bass situation happening. He raps in Yolngu and also English, which is heaps of fun. Go and check out Metagin by Baker Boy. Highly recommended. And now it's time for our freshest and most refreshing segment.
Mm.
Fashy Australia.
Mm, I love it. I love a little drop of fashy on my tongue. Maybe we can cut that.
I'm a reminds me of that tweet. When you hear someone on a podcast say, "We'll cut that later," you just know they're not gonna.
Whoa. Yeah, it's meta. So this is a sort of a secondary story. So this is the Australia government has been downgraded in the democracy ratings by Civicus. So Civicus is an international organization that does basically like up to the minute analysis of human rights and the openness of civil society specifically. And so they, I think they monitor 192 countries around the world, and they have a 5-tier rating system from open at the top down to closed at the bottom. And their ratings are basically about how much people are able to participate in public discourse safely and without being interfered by the government. And so Australia, just in the last week, has been downgraded from open to narrowed. So that's from the top category to the second from top category. And we were in the top category. There are countries like New Zealand and Canada.
And Taiwan.
And the country that, the level that we're at now narrowed, that includes Chile and South Africa and Australia. So they specifically mentioned the raids on ABC and other journalists and about the basically like police violence against protesters. And so, yeah, those things have just sort of come to enough of a head in the last week that Australia's been officially downgraded.
This is like of a piece with us, with our press freedom ranking also being downgraded earlier this year as a result, yeah, of the raids on the ABC and also Annika Smethurst and the prosecution of Witness J and Witness K as well.
Yep.
So yeah, we're doing a whole bunch of like whole secretive lot of stuff all prosecution going on at of once. Whistleblowers.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So it's getting pretty fashy around here, and the international community is noticing, fucking paying attention.
And my magic eight ball says fashiness likely to increase.
Damn. Can we shake it again?
All signs point to additional fashy. Cool.
I think that's not good.
No, yeah, it's not good. But also, if we talk about it more, we are likely to be arrested. So,
well, yeah, yep, that's how it works. Now that we've been downgraded, the cops could bust in at any time.
Yeah.
Cool. Now we've got a.
You fucked up.
So who fucked up this week?
It was Labour Minister Joel Fitzgibbon who fucked up. Somewhat unsurprisingly, that's sort of his thing.
Yeah, he's. Like, I want to say he hasn't had a good year. I guess it has been a bad year for Australia partly because of Joel.
Yeah, we sort of talked about whether or not this should go in You Fucked Up, because from Joel's point of view, I don't think it constitutes a fuck up, but from everyone who doesn't hate themselves and the earth, it's a bit of a fuck up.
Yeah, so he's the Shadow Minister for Agriculture and Resources and is notable for being one of the more reactionary right-wing members of the Labour Party. He's a member of the hard right faction.
Which is hilariously called Centre Unity.
Such a dumb country. he said some shit earlier in the year, like supporting the coalition's tax cuts for like the wealthiest people in Australia and that kind of thing. He's a representative for the Hunter Valley, which, you know, New South Wales is on fire right now.
Yeah.
There are roughly 140 separate fires burning, and one of the biggest ones is predicted to continue burning until January or February next year. So, like, this is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Of, like, you know, not to mention, like, I mean, obviously, there's massive private property losses, over 1,000 homes.
Six
people have died. And that's not to talk about the cost of the natural environment, the wildlife as well. This is, you know, a huge fucking disaster. Obviously, we've had terrible political discourse about whether or not we can discuss the fucking causes of the bushfires. Spoiler alert, it's climate change. And, you know, these are the people that he's supposed to be representing, being, like, affected by this, you know. Anyway.
The Hunter is a coal mining region.
Yes, and
that is
why Joel has been on the record saying a whole bunch of stupid shit about coal and loving coal and wanting to do more coal.
Yeah, I think he's always been into coal. And I guess, like, you know, being from the Hunter, that sort of makes sense on a tactical level, if not on a thinking about how the world works kind of level. But,
yeah, and it, like, you could generously interpret it as him kind of, like, advocating for his region, but
yeah.
I think it's probably closer to, like... it's definitely closer to him just fighting for his own political survival. And so, yeah, he's been pushing for a while for Labour to be more pro-coal. And he posted a photo of himself this week with Matt Canavan, who is also a noted coal lover from the Nationals, with the caption, "A good chat about strong future global demand for coal with Matt Canavan and World Coal Association Chief Executive Michelle Minook." Getting very chummy with his apparent political enemy. But of course, when...
they both like coal, so...
when it comes to fucking the environment and making money, politicians are all on the same side.
Yep.
So, you know, that got fucking hugely ratioed on Twitter.
Yeah, I would call that a medium fuck-up. As I say, like, from Joel's point of view, he's like, fuck yeah, coal. Here I am with these two coal bros. Fuck yeah.
I'm shaking hands, doing good shit for coal. But then he posted a second photo... which he titled Cessnock Sunset, and it's a picture of the sun shot through the
smoke haze,
the horrible smog and smoke caused by these massive bushfires. Like, dude,
it's pretty fucking insensitive. Yeah.
What the fuck? Like, oh, it's so pretty how...
Yeah, literally everyone else who posted a photo of the sun being a weird, freaky pink color and, like, of not being able to see the Sydney Harbour Bridge and all that shit. There was a lot of photos of this going around this week because it's obviously been, like, super traumatic for the people of New South Wales.
Yeah,
but,
and, like, for everybody in Sydney, even.
Yeah,
like, even if the fires aren't right there, you step outside, you can't avoid
breathe.
It. The sky is orange.
Yeah, and the sun is, like, magenta. And everyone else who's posted a photo of this has been like, wow, this is bad. And Joel Fitzgibbon is just like, ooh, beautiful Sunday.
So pretty. Oh, there's no way to stop this. We may as well enjoy it. He's an idiot.
Yeah.
And I think that this is, like, the reason this is a fuck up is that he's just Yeah, he's just absolutely showing his ass, like, in the sense of he's got absolutely no political acumen, like, if he's doing this.
Yeah.
Like, just that now is not the time, Joel. Okay? Just keep your coal burner in your pants, you know, until the bushfires stop fucking burning.
Yeah.
Right? You know, if you want to talk about, like, now's not the time, now is the time to discuss the fucking causes of the bushfires. Now is probably not the time to be promoting the economic interests of the industries that have contributed to causing them. Just a thought. Just a thought.
I like it, personally. I'm for it. I'm with you on this.
You
one,
like
Zach.
My thought?
Yeah.
Thanks, Dune. All right, let's move on.
Yeah, so now we're going to do our mains, hopefully pretty quickly, because we're already over time.
And also because they're disgusting.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't want to eat that much of them.
Well, what are we having for mains, Zach?
We're having rotten mandarins.
Mmm, disgusting. Yeah, so this is a story about the federal government rearranging the public service. So everyone has probably, who's listening to this, has probably heard about it, that the federal government is trying to rearrange a whole lot of government departments. So I think they're shrinking from 18 to 14. I should have had this number.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's right. Do you want to just, like, 30 seconds, what is the public service?
Yeah, so this is everyone who's employed by the federal government. It's
not politicians.
Not politicians, yeah. So these are people who work for the government regardless of which party is in power. And a lot of them are sort of, they're called career bureaucrats or career mandarins or whatever. And that they're basically the institutional knowledge of the government that then is supposed to provide frank and fearless advice to the government, is supposed to develop policy for them, is supposed to advise them on issues coming up. There's a whole lot of stuff that they do. They basically run the country, and then the parliament kind of sits on top of that and steers it,
yeah.
Basically.
They're sometimes referred to as, like, the machinery of government,
yeah.
Which I think is a good way of putting it. Now, do you want to explain what a mandarin is?
Yeah, it's just, like, one of them.
It basically means a public servant.
Yeah, yeah, and specifically, like, I guess, like a upper echelon one normally, and it comes from, like, a history of the Chinese imperial bureaucracy. The people who worked in that were called the mandarins, and that has been adapted by, I think, mainly Australians. I guess it's probably also used as slang in other parts of the world for government bureaucrats. But anyway, the government is combining a whole lot of different departments into super departments,
something that they've kind of test run already with the Home Affairs Department.
Yes, so that was basically the first thing that Scott Morrison did after winning the election, was combine a whole lot of different departments into the Home Affairs Department, which is kind of like our, like, domestic fascism department, headed by Peter Dutton. And so just real quickly, now the Department of Education and the Department of Employment have been merged. The Department of Agriculture and the Department of Environment have been merged. And there's a few others like that as well. And the one that I think a lot of people are really shocked about is that the Arts Department is being brought into the Department of Infrastructure, Transport, Regional Development, and Communications, which I guess maybe there's arts involved in the communications part of that, maybe? Yeah.
Mm. And it's not just that these departments are getting mashed together and as they currently stand, there's a whole bunch of people going to lose their jobs.
Yes. So the main thing that people have been talking about is the department heads who are being fired. So there are five people who collectively have more than 100 years of experience in government who have been turfed out. But it also looks like there's probably going to be at least 100 staff cut from the Department of Agriculture and Water Resources. And there's likely to be a bunch of other job cuts in other departments as they get put together.
Well, that's smart because, as we all know, water in this country is fine and doing well.
We don't need anyone paying more attention
yeah,
to it.
It pretty much takes care of itself.
Yes.
Yeah. It's water. It just goes downhill.
And Scott Morrison and the government have been very clear that they are not doing this so that they can cut jobs. They're doing it so that they can increase service delivery. And obviously, that's a huge heap of shit. There's no way that this is going to improve service delivery. There's going to be a bunch of people who don't know what they're talking about now working on issues that have been recently folded into their department. Yeah, and like, I guess I should say, I don't think it's inherently bad to combine departments. There's nothing in and of itself wrong with a super department. And it could potentially make stuff more efficient. It could combine things. So something me and Zach were talking about before we started recording is that the environment, water has now been moved from the Department of Environment and Energy into Agriculture, Water, and the Environment. And there's been, you know, cartoons in The Age and other stuff of like, oh, yeah, water is going into industry now, or is going into agriculture, or whatever, that, you know, jokes about the Murray Darling going to be further depleted by using that water for agriculture. But I think it actually makes perfect sense to have the environment with agriculture. Like, that makes perfect sense to me. But it also made sense to me previously, environment was with energy. And I think if the government was like interested in dealing with climate change and in shutting down the coal-fired power sector, it would make perfect sense and would probably be a good thing for those departments to be merged. But as it is, it's actually the government minister is for energy and coal and screwing the environment, and exactly the same now in the new agriculture department. It's actually a minister for the good Aussie farmers and fuck the water department. Like,
yeah, well, that's the issue. Like, if we're talking about some kind of platonic, theoretical, philosophical idea of how this might play out, then sure, it might not necessarily be bad, but the political reality is that industry is always going to come before environmental concerns in this country, regardless of which major party that we have in power. So people are concerned that this is going to make it easier for government to run roughshod over environmental protection in order to prop up industries that are extractive and destroying the land that we actually live off.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point that I think a lot of the commentary about this is saying that the real actual goal of combining these departments together is to reduce accountability either of the departments or the ministers responsible for those departments. Now there's going to be a lot more ministers attached to each department, and that's going to dissolve the degree of responsibility that any of them have for the decisions taken by that department.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just before we get out, we wanted to kind of talk about the way that the media has been talking about this stuff. And specifically, I just wanted to draw attention to an article from The Australian by Simon Benson, who's their national affairs editor, and Jeff Chambers, who's the federal political correspondent. So here's just the first two paragraphs of their story on Scott Morrison's reshuffle and slashing of the public service. Scott Morrison has embarked on an unprecedented dismantling of power bases dominated by bureaucratic fiefdoms and the political class in a bid to boost productivity and service delivery for Australians. The Prime Minister has put in place a network of advisors, public service chiefs, and trusted confidants to crack the, quote, Canberra Club and deliver reforms underpinning his 2022 election agenda.
Hilarious.
This shit literally sounds like it was written by the Prime Minister's office.
Yeah.
And, yep, like, I'm sure that they probably cast an eye over it.
This article from The Australian is hilarious. It has this amazing infographic of, like, all of the people that's important for Scott Morrison. And, like, it's hard to describe how pointless the infographic is, because it tells you nothing about any of them or about what they're doing or about how they're related to Scott Morrison.
They've just drawn, like, there's a whole bunch of little floating heads, and they've drawn lines, like, connecting Scott Morrison to each of these, like, little heads. And Jenny Morrison has her own special little line there.
Category.
And if you click on her head to get more information, it says, provides emotional support for Morrison, which, like, may be true. And, like,
but probably doesn't need to be in this infographic of an analysis of how the public service restructure is happening.
I mean, on the one hand, maybe it's positive for us to be talking about the, like, how important it is for people to have emotional support in political jobs or whatever. But
yeah, not Scott Morrison, though. He can be emotionally unsupported as far as I'm concerned.
Get fucked.
Yeah,
Jenny, be sad.
That. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like an absolutely, like, bootlicking article from The Australian. But there was another quote that we wanted to draw attention from an opinion piece in the ABC.
Yeah, this is a much less bootlicky article, and it's by Laura Tingle. And in it is a quote, and we wanted to give a best take to the quote, not to Laura, though this article was good. So let's play that sting.
It was the best of
takes.
It was the blurst of
takes.
You stupid monkey.
Okay, so article says, does this mean the government might abandon some of its ideological warfare against institutions, meaning specifically about this department restructure thing? And so there's a reply here from an anonymous source. Don't be ridiculous, this person snorted. If anything, this government is more ideologically driven than Abbott. They want to win the culture wars they see in education, in the public service, in all of our institutions, and they'll come for the ABC too, of course. There'll be a big clean out at the top of the public service, but Morrison will wait a while to do that. They believe the left has been winning the war for the last 20 years and are determined to turn the tables. Morrison will just be craftier about the way he goes about it.
Yeah, I really like that quote because I think it rings really true.
Yeah,
personally. Yep. I think that is a great summation, a great analytical summation of what's going on here. I guess that for a certain time during the beginning of Morrison's prime ministership, there was this kind of, I guess, attitude that he... you know, was a
moderate.
He came in at the last minute. He was a moderate who brought together, like, the, quote, left and right sides of his party, you know, like, extreme hard right fascists and just, like, relatively hard right fascists. And that he was just going to try and, like, keep everything humming along without rocking the boat too much. Most of the, like, legislation that he was bringing in was just deliberately designed to wedge Labor and wasn't actually pushing an agenda. But actually... like, he's extremely fucking ideological. I mean, you don't get to the top of the Liberal Party without being an ideologue, I don't think. And this is a great description of the way that he is just, like, he's kind of doing it in front of everybody's faces. And you've got, like, probably more than half of the media basically looking at this and lauding these decisions as cutting red tape and, like, robbing these bureaucrats of their...
all of whom are leftists, vice by the way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, which is just such a stupid concept to begin with. But yeah, I mean, I think this is a sign that he is a really dangerous prime minister and that he's kind of just getting started. So a good end to the year politically.
Yeah. This, is likely to be our last news show. No, it's not. Zach is shaking his head. The producer is shaking his head. We're going to do... 1 million more episodes this year.
100 years.
No, we are planning on winding down soon. And this has been the last sitting week of Parliament. So it's been a depressing shit show all year. But just really this last week has really just ramped that up to 11.
Yeah, I think that the kind of stupidity and pointlessness of Parliament has really been amped up and on show. But also... how dangerously effective the government can be at destroying the things that make our lives okay.
Yeah.
So
on that cheery note,
So we'll bring you one more regular episode next week, and then we're going to pre-record a couple of like special episodes so that you have something to listen to while you're like hiding from your family at Christmas. Mm-hmm. Not hiding, just taking a break. Sometimes you just need a breather, lie down.
I'm Jewish, so I'm going to be just like a regular amount of seeing my family or not. But yeah, I'll listen to our show because I'm going to be bored as fuck because everyone else is going to be at Christmas.
We've got a couple of special episodes coming up for you. But yeah, next week will be our last regular one of the year. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you are enjoying the show and you want to help us out or support us, please rate and review us. Preferably on iTunes, but also on CastBox or Stitcher, or come and leave us a review on our Facebook page, which you should also like and follow. That's AusPol Snack Pod.
Yep, and as we said up top, you can join the AusPol Shitposting Facebook group, where you can see some flaming hot takes and crispy memes.
You can also follow us on Twitter at AusPol Snack Pod.
And you can donate to us at patreon.com/AusPol Snack Pod. And if you give us just $1 per month, you get a bonus episode of us talking some extra shit. So we've gotten very good feedback about the bonus episodes. So if you like the show, that's the ideal way to support us from our point of view.
Yeah, that really helps us out. If you donate, you also get access to our private Discord where you can chat to us. And we're thinking about maybe making a Spotify playlist of some new Australian music that we enjoy, kind of a soundtrack of the show type of thing, which we'll put up there. This was just inspired by, I just really like that Baker Boy track. I think everybody should listen to it. And I can't play it on the show and I want everybody to hear it. So I'm going to make a playlist to make you listen to it. So you should join us. But thanks so much again for tuning in. Cheers, noon. Keep on snacking in the free world.
Crunch, crunch.